This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're going to spend this hour reviewing what happened politically in 2013 and what to expect this year. We'll focus on national, state, and local contests that will be on the ballot this November. Joining us in the studio are Caleb Fox, the Executive Director of the Hamilton County Democratic Party, and Ashwin Kuratiel, the Executive Director of the Hamilton County Republican Party. Joining us by phone is Kyle Kondik, who's the Director of Communications for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He closely follows congressional and gubernatorial races and contributes to Sabato's Crystal Ball. That's a political analysis website and newsletter created by the Center for Politics Director Larry Sabato. You can join our conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Thank you all for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Kyle, since you're on the phone, let me begin with you. I said that we'd start out, we're going to look back at 2013, spend a little more time talking, though, about this year, 2014. What would your top political story be for 2013, or what would the headline be for you politically for 2013?
You know, I think just sort of generically, I guess it would be sort of the president's kind of deteriorating approval rating, and I think it's sort of interesting to see as to whether that continues or not. But the president's in the low 40s, and just if that's what his approval rating is in November, one would expect the Republicans to have a pretty strong midterm. And so, you know, there are lots of things that go into that approval rating. I would say Obamacare is one of them, and other things that happened in 2013. But as someone who tries to, analyze elections and try to predict what's going to happen, that number of just the approval rating is kind of a good catch-all for the state of the American electorate. And I would say that for the president, it's not particularly great right now.
Caleb, your political headline for 2013.
Well, first of all, I'd like to react to that because I noticed just this morning that in the last week, as things have improved with Obamacare signups, that the president's approval rating actually has gone back up to the mid-40s. And the disapproval rating has also gone down, so there's been a net gain for the president of 10 points just in the last few days. And it'll be interesting to see if that continues. Certainly, the mayor's race here in Cincinnati was the top story, closely followed by the streetcar. and certainly, at least from somebody in my position, it was let's just say it was an interesting year. I'm glad to see it behind me, and we'll move on to things this coming fall.
And we'll talk a little bit more about the mayor's race and the streetcar coming up toward the latter part of the program. Ashwin, how about you?
Thanks again for having me. And just kind of to bounce back about both those things, going back to what Kyle said, I agree with him. I think Obamacare is going to be a huge point of referendum for the midterm elections. And I think typically you see the president, the party that is not in the White House in that second term of a president's tenure, tends to do well in the midterm elections. And I think that's going to be true this year as well. Obamacare's failure isn't just in the rollout. I think it's in a much bigger sense that it's not a thoroughly vetted plan, and it never really was. And I think Republicans are going to do well as a result of that in November of this year. And I think a highlight for myself and the local party here, the Republican Party in 2013, was our Cincinnati elections. And not just the Cincinnati local elections, but local elections across the suburban areas too. I think in Hamilton County, you saw a lot of people vouching for and asking for a more fiscally responsible group of leaders, whether that's Republicans in the city like Amy Murray and Charlie Winburn getting on city council, or in the suburbs where we won a lot of races. I think that was definitely the highlight of 2013 for me.
Kyle, let me throw it back to you. There was, of all days, this morning on Morning Edition, they had their political editor on previewing the 2014 elections, and I thought how timely, since that's what we're going to do on Cincinnati Edition this afternoon. The political editor for NPR thought that the themes for the midterms for Democrat or for Republicans, rather, would be the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and for Democrats, it would be tying Republicans to the Tea Party. What's your take on the themes for 2014?
I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, the thing that the Democrats' best moment of 2013, I think, was the shutdown when the Democratic poll numbers shot way up in October when, Republicans essentially got the blame for the shutdown. And I think that, you know, privately, I think Democrats would say that they would love for something like that to happen or more, you know, five of those things to happen. And we're probably not going to have a government shutdown because of the recent Paul Ryan, Patty Murray budget deal, but there could be a fight over the debt ceiling. And I think what Democrats want is to essentially say that the Republicans are too extreme to govern, which is sort of the standard Democratic playbook, I would say. And then for the Republicans, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that it's a, you know, they look back to 2010 and you know, attribute a lot of their success to Obamacare, and I think they're just going to go back to that playbook in 2014, and, you know, we'll see if they can have another big wave election essentially on the same issue that they did 4 years ago. But, you know, that seems to be the obvious playbook for both parties.
Ashwin, let me flip around here a little bit in the studio.
Sure.
Your themes, if you were put together Republican strategy for 2014's midterms.
I think our party unity here locally is strong. I think we've done a good job of doing, especially in local elections, kind of building a strong group of conservative leadership, and I think that that's going to continue forward. I think we've got, you know, four incumbents at the top of the ticket here statewide that are strong, and I think that we're going to be fine in 2014. I think that would be kind of my continue on playbook.
Caleb?
Well, one reaction, I heard that piece this morning, and I thought there was one piece that was left out of what might be part of the playbook coming forward in 2014. Yes, I think the Republicans are going to go back and try and continue to grind the axe on the Affordable Care Act. What I think you may very well see, though, on the Democratic side is a lot of discussion about the failure to extend unemployment benefits. That's something that polls very well among voters across the spectrum. And I also think you're going to hear a lot about the increase in the minimum wage, which also is something that polls very well across the political spectrum. Even conservatives, in many cases, support that. And so I think beyond the things that were mentioned this morning, those two might be things that we're going to continue to hear about.
Kyle, obviously in the Republican Party, there's at the national level, there is a split. There's a split in Congress. How is that going to impact 2014 elections? I know in the last crystal ball of 2013, you were predicting that there will be at least one surprising result in a Republican Senate primary. Where do you think that'll be, and how do you think that's going to play out?
So there are a number of Republican senators, many of whom are actually in pretty safe Republican states that are facing primary challengers. Also, there are going to be kind of establishment versus Tea Party primaries in primary races where the Republicans are challenging a Democratic incumbent. One place to watch, I think, is North Carolina. That's a state that went for Obama in 2008, then for Romney in 2012. Kay Hagan is the freshman senator there, Democrat, and there's a kind of establishment candidate, the Speaker of the State House in North Carolina, who's running, but then there's also a bunch of kind of, I would basically call, Tea Party candidates running against him for the nomination. And if one of those people win, it's possible they'll be a good candidate in the general, or it's possible they'll be a very bad candidate, like we've seen in some previous Republican primaries. And so I would watch that state, but more generally, I would just watch and see if Republicans basically nominate an unelectable candidate in the Senate race that they could win, because we've seen that in 2010 and 2012.
What about Kentucky and Mitch McConnell's primary challenge? Do you see that as serious?
You know, I don't really see it myself. That race is going to get a ton of attention because, obviously, you've got the Senate Minority Leader and not only just a primary against Tea Party challenger Matt Bevin, but also there's a credible Democrat in that race, Allison Lundergan Grimes. But a lot of people have been kind of bullish on Bevin's chances, but it just strikes me as really hard to imagine the Senate Minority Leader losing a primary or frankly, a general election in a state that this Republican, at least on the national level, as Kentucky is.
But even if this Matt Bevin's comes close or comes, you know, within striking distance, does that do damage to McConnell in the general election?
You know, potentially. But again, I really feel like national forces in many ways guide these races. And, I mean, is Kentucky really going to vote for a Democratic Senate candidate with Obama in the White House. It just, if you know, if this were 2000, I mean, McConnell had a tough race in 2008, but it was a, you know, a horrible environment for Republicans nationally. It's just, I don't know, it's just kind of hard for me to imagine at this point.
Is the McConnell race, if he wins the primary and, you know, sets up a match with Allison Lundergan Grimes in the fall, is that going to be the quote-unquote national race that everybody's going to be watching?
I think it's going to get a ton of attention, but I think that the places that will actually decide control of the Senate are going to be other races, I think. There are a lot of Democratic incumbents in places like Alaska, Louisiana, Arkansas, North Carolina, as I mentioned. I think ultimately those are the races that are going to be more competitive when it's all said and done.
Caleb, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, the one I'm paying close attention to is Georgia, where you have an open seat where Saxby Chambliss is stepping down, and you have Louie Nunn's daughter running on the Democratic side pretty much unchallenged, and you have a free-for-all on the Republican side, again with a lot of Tea Party folks vying for that nomination. I think that could be a very interesting race.
I think that's right, too.
You know, I would kind of take a maybe a one-step back view of it and say that I think the swing states, especially Democrats holding seats in swing states, is going to be really interesting, because the thing that's really serve to keep the Republican Party that I work with here locally together is the opposition to Obamacare and sort of a liberal, left-leaning liberal agenda that's kind of been put forth by this president. So I think in those states, that's going to be really interesting to see how that, what the effect of that is on the incumbents there.
We're talking about control of the U.S. Senate, but the House also could be up for grabs. There's, what, 435 races. Of those 435, Kyle, how many of those are actually what you would term competitive?
You know, I think it's probably like, you know, 40 or 50 on the low end, and maybe it gets to 60 or 70. But, you know, most incumbents are, even though Congress is really, really unpopular, you know, most incumbents are going to get reelected. That's generally how it goes in the House. And you'll see some competitive seats. But the thing is that there just aren't a ton of targets for either party. And so, you know, Republicans have a 17-seat majority in the House. At this point, I guess I would expect Republicans maybe to add a few seats, but either way, it's probably going to be kind of there's probably only going to be minimal gains for one party or the other in the House. I think the House is kind of sleepy this cycle.
Don't we hear sometimes it seems like we hear this mantra, you know, throw the bums out, but not my bum because I like my bum.
Yeah, and even, you know, the polling for Congress really is very dreadful, and you even see sometimes the question is that specifically, would you reelect your own member? And even that number is actually kind of weak, or weaker than it is historically. But the thing is that even if people are sort of generically upset at Congress, they also, that doesn't mean they're going to vote for the other party in their district. And most of these districts are not very competitive. You know, they don't have a lot of two-party competition. So again, I wouldn't, even though, yes, there's always that kind of sentiment about Congress is really unpopular, throw them out. It's just not what people do generally.
Just real quickly before we have to go to a break here, Kyle, what about control of the U.S. Senate?
I think it's kind of a coin flip at this point. I mean, the Republicans need to pick up six seats. I feel like their worst possible outcome is probably something like plus three. And that would probably be a pretty bad cycle. So it's conceivable to see how the Republicans could get to six, but it's very close.
Guys, you want to weigh in here, Kyle?
One thing I'd like to point out is
Caleb.
One of the things I'm watching closely is actually across the river. While we may not see a big shift in the House in terms of which party controls how many seats, we could also see a shift in ideology. And here in Northern Kentucky, we have a primary race now between Steve Stevens, who's been president of the Chamber of Commerce for years, running against the incumbent Thomas Massey, who is a very much a Tea Party candidate. So you're beginning to see the center of the Republican Party beginning to challenge the Tea Party in some of these races, and I think that's indicative of what might be going on in other places across the country.
Ashwin?
I think kind of remains to be seen. You know, I think it's sort of early to tell in the year right now, but yeah, we'll see.
We are discussing political happenings from last year and what to expect in 2014, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're talking about national, state, and local politics today. Our guests are Caleb Fox, the executive director of the Hamilton County Democratic Party, Ashwin Kuratiel, the executive director of the Hamilton County Republican Party, and Kyle Kondik, who's the director of communications for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. And joining us now from Columbus is Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. You can join our conversation, too. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And Karen, since you're just joining us, let me go to you first as we start talking about the Ohio governor's race. Things in Columbus beginning to feel like that there's going to be a primary and a general election coming up later this year?
As a matter of fact, yes, it looks like we're going to have a primary potentially in both the Democratic race and the Republican race. Ed Fitzgerald, the Cuyahoga County executive, has been out as the Democratic candidate for governor for quite a while, since about April, I think. And just recently, Todd Portune down in Hamilton County, the Hamilton County commissioner, has said that he's interested in running. He will decide, hopefully by the end of this month, whether he's going to run or not. But he certainly expressed a strong interest. And now just today... Well, actually, late last night, we found out that the Tea Party groups in Ohio, who had said that they wanted to challenge Governor Kasich primarily over Medicaid expansion, now say they're going to do it. There's a candidate, Ted Stiveno, who says that he is going to run. He's going to make his announcement next week. But it looks like we could potentially have a primary on both sides of the aisle.
Is it surprising that these folks are coming along, isn't it a little late in the game to be entering these contests, considering the primary is less than 5 months away, or about 5 months away?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, certainly to have Ed Fitzgerald out there so early, that suggested there might be a primary on the Democratic side, but the Democrats came together pretty quickly right after that. You had prominent Democrats who had been looked at as possible candidates very quickly dropping out. So it looked like the party was coalesced behind Ed Fitzgerald, and certainly leading Democrats will say that Ed Fitzgerald is their candidate. But then when Todd Portune came out, this is kind of showing to some people, or suggesting to some, that there may be a split amongst the Democratic Party. So I guess we need to wait and see. I wouldn't necessarily say that Todd Portune is a candidate. He is thinking about it. He is preparing for it, but he hasn't filed yet, as far as I know.
Right. Yeah, he's not committed to this race yet. Now, it seemed interesting to me, Karen, that when he made his announcement the other day, there wasn't this great rush of Hamilton County Democrats coming out and saying, "No, he's our guy." In fact, some of them said just the opposite. Elected officials, like city council members, who came out instantly and said, no, we've already committed to Ed Fitzgerald as a candidate of the Ohio Democratic Party. We support him. We have nothing against Todd, but that's the way it is.
Right. And that's what I've been hearing, too, that the party has really started to close ranks behind Ed Fitzgerald behind the scenes, calls being made to county party chairs and this sort of thing to really try to shore that up, so to speak.
Caleb, since we've got a Hamilton County Democrat right here in the room.
Well, I would echo what I just heard. I think, yes, the Hamilton County Democratic Party has endorsed Ed Fitzgerald, and I see no momentum at this point to change that. It remains to be seen, I think, whether Todd can garner support around the state. I mean, obviously, he's been a candidate of the Democratic Party for many years, and we certainly support him as a county commissioner. But this issue of the governor's race, I think, remains to be seen. My take is that the Democratic Party is pretty united behind Ed Fitzgerald at this point.
Is there something else that Todd Portune is trying to get out of this if most of the Democratic establishment is saying, you know, we're behind Ed Fitzgerald, that's
our
candidate?
People are speculating that they might be angling for the lieutenant governor's spot. We'll see about that. I don't know. I'm not certain that he might be the best choice for Fitzgerald. He's got other issues he probably has on his mind.
Angering the entire Ohio Democratic Party establishment is probably not the best way to go about angling for that kind of appointment, is it?
I would agree, yes.
Ashwin, what about this challenge from this Tea Party leader in Claremont County to Governor Kasich?
Yeah, Ted Stiveno, we do know him. They're neighboring county to us, of course. He's a good man. He's a smart guy. I also know that, you know, John Kasich had done incredible things from taking, you know, picking up with what Governor Strickland had left, you know, the Strickland kind of fiscal issues that were going on and just the mess he inherited. He's done a really great job. We're going to be a united party come November, and that unity is going to come in trying to keep power in Ohio. And that's what we're going to do as Republicans. And the Fitzgerald team, I mean, this is kind of just one more sort of hurdle in a very slow sort of tumultuous start that they've had with the Kearney issues and everything like that. So we're going to be a party that's united come November.
Karen, with Stephen O and the Tea Party Challenge, clearly it's a lot of it's about the Medicaid expansion issue. Do you see any other issues out there that are driving this?
Well, I was at the Tea Party convention, the We the People convention, mm-hmm. here in September, that the Tea Party folks put together. About 300 activists from around the state were here. And certainly the Medicaid expansion issue was the big thing, though you'll hear from a lot of these activists that they feel that state spending is just too big, that they feel the size of government is too big, and they appreciate tax cuts, but there are other issues with regard to the size of government and how it's spending that they really feel that Governor Kasich has not addressed. And they'll point to the size of the budget, saying it's one of the biggest budgets ever, and saying that that's a problem for them. But certainly the Medicaid expansion has been a big, big deal, and that's going to be the thing that I think most of them are going to be anchoring on.
Kyle, let me get you back in the conversation here with your crystal ball, and also we should tell folks you're from Ohio. So what's your crystal ball saying about the Ohio governor's race?
I think John Kasich is still a pretty decent favorite for re-election, although... there are some signs I think the Democrats can point to. The economy in Ohio is not that great. And also, let's be honest here. I mean, John Kasich, he is someone who is on occasion makes trouble for himself, although I think after kind of a rocky 2011, he's been on pretty good behavior in terms of, you know, not making gaffes and that sort of thing. We talked earlier about just sort of national factor or, you know, just sort of general factors being, you know, favoring Republicans to some degree in federal races. I think those factors also favor Republicans running in governor's races. I mean, it is good to be an incumbent, and frankly, it's good for John Kasich that there's a Democrat in the White House. One of the reasons that Ted Strickland lost was that his own party controlled the White House, and there was a big backlash against Democrats, and Strickland kind of got caught up in that. Well, if there's a national backlash this time, it very well could be against Democrats, which would help John Kasich, even if things in Ohio aren't going that great.
Kyle, let me stay for you for just a second. We talked about that a lot of eyes were going to be watching the U.S. Senate race in Kentucky. How closely does the nation care who is elected Ohio's governor, or do people watch that?
I think that people who follow politics probably pay a little bit more attention to Senate races, but, you know, I think John Kasich is probably a little bit more prominent than your average governor, and frankly, I think that he'll probably at least consider running for president, provided he wins a second term, and so I do think that there is some kind of D.C. interest in Kasich as a potential presidential candidate. And look, I mean, Ohio is always really important in presidential politics, and so I think that it just generally gets more attention in the national political scene anyway, as being kind of an important bellwether state.
The crystal ball has always kind of listed Kasich as a dark horse for 2016, but a sizable win next fall would probably propel him up a notch or two.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, he's certainly not. I mean, it's going to be a pretty crowded field of Republicans running,
right.
And I also think that the Medicaid expansion is probably not all that helpful to Kasich in a Republican presidential nomination fight. Although I do think it's helpful to him as a general election candidate in Ohio in 2014.
Right. Or possibly as a running mate for somebody.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think we can sometimes overrate the importance of having, you know, a candidate from a certain state on a ticket in order to do better in that state. There's not a lot of research that
right.
backs that up.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, one thing I do know is that Chris Christie and Kasich are fairly close, and Chris Christie is certainly a possibility to be the nominee in 2016. And I could certainly imagine him picking Kasich as his running mate. I mean, I think he'd be on the list.
Karen, are you hearing anything in Columbus about when Ed Fitzgerald might select a new running mate after State Senator Eric Kearney withdrew from consideration?
Well, I spoke to Ed Fitzgerald the night that Kearney dropped out of the race, and he told me that he was not going to rush the process, not that it was rushed before, but that he was going to take time and really look back at some of the people that he had looked at before and maybe some other people. So I don't expect an announcement on that till maybe the end of this month. And certainly there doesn't want to be an accusation that there was a rushed candidate here with everything that's happened. I mean, when the Washington Post says this was the worst rollout in the country and that everybody keeps saying that Ed Fitzgerald cannot make any more mistakes, he's going to be very careful with this.
Caleb, there was a lot of thought that Senator Kearney was the pick to bring along Southwest Ohio. Does Ed Fitzgerald obligate himself to select another running mate from this part of Ohio?
Well, I think there is more to that pick than just Southwest Ohio. Certainly that was a part of it, but I think another piece of it was to strengthen his appeal among African-American voters statewide. And so that issue is still there. And whether it's from Southwest Ohio or some other part of the state, I would not be at all surprised to see him, Mr. Fitzgerald, continue with that consideration.
I would say one thing, if I may add one thing. It's likely that the candidate for lieutenant governor will not be from Northeast Ohio, at least according to what Ed Fitzgerald has said from the beginning, that he was going to be looking outside Northeast Ohio.
I agree with that.
But the fact that Eric Kearney had that appeal, to African American voters down here in this corner of the state, which you could transfer into other urban areas of Ohio, makes it pretty likely, I would think, that he's going to turn to another African American Democrat.
I think there's a pretty good likelihood of that too.
Karen, what about some of the races on the statewide races below governor? It seems like Howard and I were talking in the newsroom today. One of our colleagues wasn't really sure that David Pepper was running for attorney general, and it's like, where have you been?
He's running.
especially if you're on Facebook.
He's done nothing but run.
Absolutely.
But is that the marquee lower race below the governor, or are there others to watch?
It's certainly the most active lower race, I would say. David Pepper ran last time and has certainly been looking at the race with Richard Cordray that Mike DeWine ran for attorney general, and that was the closest race there among those five statewide executive offices, and I think David Pepper feels that there's some vulnerability here, and Pepper has certainly been out there. He's been out there arguably more than Ed Fitzgerald in terms of being a campaigner, sending out lots of news releases and that sort of thing. But there's a couple of really good races. I mean, you have Secretary of State John Houston, who's been considered a rising star in the Republican Party, running against Democratic State Senator Nina Turner of Cleveland. And she's a firecracker. I mean, she's a soundbite machine for those of us in the media. and she's got a real way of speaking and bringing people in. I think that's going to be a very interesting race there. And, you've got Josh Mandel running against Connie Pillage from down in Cincinnati. Military records are now fair in terms of he's got one, she's got one. So there's some talk about how that could kind of balance that race out a little bit. But there's some other interesting races going on. And then, of course, potential ballot issues. That could swing certain races, especially when it gets close, one way or the other.
And Connie Pillage has a history in her House races of being able to pull some Republican votes and certainly a lot of Republican-leaning independent votes.
That's true. That's been a tough district all along. She's won it.
Yeah, and she's won it twice.
And I would say to that point, I guess I see the truth to that here locally, but going back to Josh Mandel, he's just a proven statewide candidate. He's by far, one of the most dynamic and hardworking candidates that we've got that visits us locally. And he is going to be it's going to be really tough for her to make that same sort of inroad while Josh has had that whole kind of over the whole state. He's done the same thing across the state.
Oh, yeah. So he's run statewide, but his last experience was not a good one.
That's true.
I would add, too. Oh, go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, and I would say, in an Obama presidential year where you've got a lot of top of the ticket kind of influence and not that same effect this year where you've got five statewide Republicans running at the top of the ticket, I think that is going to be a different sort of effect.
Karen, go ahead.
And it should, yeah, it should be mentioned that there's the auditor's race. You have David Yost, who had kind of irritated some Republicans with his desire to audit jobs Ohio. And then you've got John Carney, who is a state representative from here in Columbus, opposing him. That's going to be a big jobs Ohio race. You're going to hear a lot of talk about jobs Ohio in that race, I think. Mm-hmm.
Karen, I know you're going to have to go here in just a moment. Real quickly, do we have any, you mentioned the ballot initiatives. Any idea at this point how many and what those ballot initiatives may be this November?
Well, certainly the same-sex marriage ballot issue is out there. You have a split, though, in the gay community over whether it should be on this ballot. And so I think you're going to see a lot of activists working behind the scenes on whether that should go to the ballot this year or wait till later years. You have medical marijuana, I think, is still out there, this so-called right to work. The Tea Party folks have been working on that one for a while. Those are the ones that are immediately coming to mind. The Medicaid expansion ballot issue that was potentially going to be before voters next year has been pulled. And who knows what could come up. The deadline isn't till August, I believe. So we've got some time if somebody wanted to bring up something new.
Karen Kassler is with the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and she joined us from Columbus. Karen, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
You're welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. If you'd like to join the conversation, 513-419-7100. Again, 513-419-7100. Or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Kyle, the national parties, how much attention do they pay to those ballot initiatives that could be on the ballot here in Ohio? Because that would, in some ways, have to direct their strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some feeling that big statewide issues can have effects on turnout one way or the other, although one of the cases that's often cited is the gay marriage ban in Ohio that was on the ballot in 2004, and there's some thought that that was kind of designed to help get George W. Bush reelected, and, you know, maybe it was, although I don't think there's a ton of evidence we've seen since then that, you know, George W. Bush wouldn't have won Ohio if that hadn't been on the ballot. I mean, it might have been slightly helpful to him, but I think that effect can be a little bit overstated. I will say, just in terms of the other statewide races in Ohio, I think that there will be some national attention on Josh Mandel's race for treasurer, just because he became kind of a you know, nationally known figure in his unsuccessful Senate race against Sherrod Brown. And I also think for Democrats, both in Ohio and probably nationally, they still probably look at Mandel as a candidate that they would like to, you know, stop in his tracks at a young age by dealing him a second statewide defeat in 3 years. And so I think that race is going to be pretty important for Democrats, and Connie Pillich might be able to raise some out-of-state money for that.
Caleb?
I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a same-sex marriage amendment on the ballot this November, it would probably energize both sides. I mean, it would energize evangelical Christians on one side. It would energize the people who support that position on the other side. Would it just turn out to be a wash?
That's a little hard to tell. It certainly would drive turnout.
I
think that's true. And, you know, at least from my perspective, I think the rule of thumb with regard to turnout is that a high turnout election benefits Democrats. So if we have a controversial issue on the ballot, it drives turnout up. I think that helps Democratic candidates.
Ashwin?
I would say it benefits incumbents. So, yeah, there tend to be Republicans this year, so.
You know, one other thing, just to jump in real quick about a gay marriage issue, would be really interesting to see how Senator Rob Portman reacts to that, because, of course, Portman announced his support for gay marriage last year, which was one of the bigger political stories in Ohio. And it would be interesting not only to see if Portman actually supported whatever ballot issue came out, but if he actually campaigned for it in some way. So that's an interesting little wild card here. Although, back in 2004, if I recall, a lot of the Republican statewide elected officials actually did not support that issue because they thought it was poorly written. And obviously it passed by a big margin anyway.
Rob Portman's said that he will not go out and campaign for that if it makes the ballot. But he said that all Ohioans will know where I stand on this and that he would vote for it. Now you have the former Attorney General of the state of Ohio, Jim Petro, a Republican, who is actively involved in trying to get this issue on the ballot.
Kyle, if we can switch back.
Yeah, and so, I think there would be, there certainly would be a split in the GOP on it.
Mm-hmm. When we were talking in the first part of the program about control of the U.S. House, I think you said on the low end there was maybe, 40 seats that were in play, on the high number, 60. Are any of those in Ohio?
Yeah, there are two. Ohio 14, which is a Steve LaTourette's old seat. It's a Northeast Ohio seat, but it's not really Cleveland. It's more of Ashtabula, Lake County, et cetera. That's the first term incumbent there is David Joyce. He didn't really have an opponent last time because LaTourette got out early. Democrats are targeting that seat, although it's questionable as to how competitive it'll be. And then the other district is Ohio 6, which is the Ohio River district that stretches basically from Youngstown all the way down to down to the southern tip of the state. Bill Johnson is Republican incumbent there. Jennifer Garrison, who is a former member of the Ohio House, is running there. Both those seats are probably going to stay Republican, but Democrats are targeting both of them to some degree.
Kyle, any final thoughts on 2014 before we let you go this afternoon?
I the governor's race is sort of where it's at in Ohio, I think. And I think John Kasich looks okay right now, but there's still a ways to go and, a lot that'll shake out. But a lot of people nationally will be paying attention because, again, I do think that he's a possible potential presidential candidate, provided he wins.
Well, hopefully we can call on you in the coming months for some more analysis.
Absolutely.
We are talking about politics in the new year. Our thanks to Kyle Condict, the Director of Communications for the University of Virginia Center for Politics, and also Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau in Columbus for joining our discussion. We're going to continue our political chat in just a moment, focusing on issues in Cincinnati and Hamilton County. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're continuing our discussion of politics in 2013 and looking ahead to 2014. We're going to spend the rest of the program talking about issues in Cincinnati and Hamilton County. And in the studio with us, Caleb Fox, the Executive Director of the Hamilton County Democratic Party, and Ashwin Kortil, the Executive Director of the Hamilton County Republican Party. Again, you can join the conversation 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Caleb, when we were talking about your headline for 2013, you mentioned the mayor's race and the streetcar. But with the streetcar, that was pretty divisive.
Very divisive.
But everybody, when it was done, we're going to join hands and we're going to work together when we come back to City Hall in January.
Well, let's hope so. But when you talk about what happened here in 2013, at least in terms of Democratic Party, I think you can't avoid the fact that the mayor's race was a knockdown, drag-out fight between two Democrats, and people lined up on either side of that issue, and to some extent, so did some of the city council candidates to one degree or another. So we just have been through an election that, in many ways, was fought within the Democratic Party as opposed to along the more traditional Democratic-Republican lines.
Okay. So, Caleb, I'm going to ask you the same question you asked me at a public speaking engagement today.
Sure.
And that is, do you think it would have made a difference if the Hamilton County Democratic Party had endorsed a mayoral candidate?
I think that it might have changed the margin some. Mm-hmm. But I think the outcome was very clear-cut, and I really don't think an endorsement by the party would have had any real effect on who got elected. But what it would have done is make that divide within the Democratic Party even more difficult to deal with after the fact. Part of what we have to do now is to pull back together folks who have some hard feelings over the streetcar issue, over the mayor's race, over the council race. Get them all back in the fold and focus on winning an election in 2014. And that's a bit of a challenge.
Is it? I've covered City Hall for some time. There used to be a weekly Democratic caucus meeting in the mayor's office. Is it fair to say, is there even a Democratic caucus to meet now at City Hall?
Prior to Mark Mallory becoming mayor, that caucus actually took place at Tim Burke's law office. And Tim, of course, is the chair of the County Democratic Party. And there is an effort being made to resume that practice. Some folks are showing up, others are not. And, again, we're still dealing with some of the wounds left over from a hard-fought campaign, both for the election and then over the continuation of the streetcar. Hopefully we can get past that. And there are a lot of things that we need to focus on here in Cincinnati beyond just that. And council has its work cut out for it.
I would agree with Caleb that the streetcar was definitely a highlight of 2013, even if you just take the election itself and accepting all the stuff that came afterwards to lead us to where we are now. Just the election itself really, I think, was a referendum on some fiscal issues like that, like the parking lease deal and the streetcar deal. And not just the two Republicans who were elected, one, Charlie Winburn, getting back on council and Amy Murray getting on council, but also several fiscally conservative or opposed to that issue candidates ended up being successful because of that. So I think what Caleb said has a lot of truth.
Caleb, there had to be some eyes raised when a Democratic mayor, John Cranley, appoints Republican Charlie Winburn to head the Budget and Finance Committee, which is arguably probably the most powerful council committee, because anything that spends any money whatsoever has to go through that committee.
Mm-hmm. I think the answer is yes, there were some eyes raised. Obviously, part of what happens in politics is that folks like the mayor reward those folks who sided with them during an election campaign and going forward, and I think that certainly played into that decision. On the other hand, going into this whole fight about the streetcar, I think the mayor believed he had a solid majority that would be there with him on issues, and what he's learned now is that may not necessarily be true. So we'll see what happens going forward, but yes, that was an interesting
Ashwin,
point.
The Hamilton County Republican Party has to be thrilled that there's a Republican in charge of the Budget and Finance Committee.
Well, and I'd add to that Charlie Winburn is a gentleman who's been a council member for a long time, an elected official for a long time, public servant, and has done well across the city for a long time, too. So I think he has good qualifications for that role as well.
I'd add one more thing to that. Charlie, at one point, was a Democrat.
Yes, and I remember this.
And I have noticed in his campaigns that there are times where he goes out of his way to kind of avoid the fact that he switched parties some time ago. And there are a lot of folks out there who still believe he is a Democrat. It's an odd sort of thing.
Talking about switching parties, we had a comment from Bill on Facebook. Will Cranley eventually make a switch to the GOP?
I don't think so, no. Aside from what went on in this last election and this contentious fight about the streetcar, when you go back and look at John Cranley's voting record as a member of city council during the time that he served when Roxanne was also there, their voting record was very, very similar. John is a more centrist, conservative Democrat, that's true. But I don't think there's much doubt that John Cranley is a Democrat, and he would, if he chooses to pursue other avenues in the future, he would do so as a Democrat.
Is that anything, Ashwin, that the Republican
Party
would
stay out of that one?
You're not going to go courting?
That's okay.
Ashwin, let me ask you this. You look at the party in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a candidate for mayor this year. I know you looked for one. You did well out in the suburbs. You got Charlie Winburn and Amy Murray elected. But is it just an impossibility to win the mayor's office in the city now because of the demographics?
I don't think so. I think if you look at the Mallory-Wenstrup race, I think that proves a good example of if you do have a good candidate who's hardworking, even if they don't have a long political track record behind them, there's a chance of doing well. You got to say it's a challenge in the city for Republicans, but the fact that we get someone like Amy Murray on, who is out and out fiscal conservative, very first one to tell everybody that yes, she is a Republican, she's running for council to make a positive change. There is potential for growth, so I think these are little wins that add up in the future.
Caleb, I mean the demographics of the city. What do you see as a future of?
You know, one of the things I said to a number of people during the course of this campaign is we have seen a gradual change in Hamilton County from a county that was at one time fairly heavily dominated by Republicans to one that's now more balanced. President Obama carried this county twice in a row, and that was the first time Hamilton County had voted for a Democrat since Lyndon Johnson in 1964. And the city has gotten to the point where in those two elections, Obama's percentage was in 70-plus range. My comment was that we've been used to politics in Cincinnati breaking down along Democratic-Republican lines. That's been kind of the tradition. But in a place like Cuyahoga County, where you have, four to one Democratic voters, politics there tends to break down along factions within the Democratic Party. And so my suspicion is that, at least to some extent, we're going to see that pattern repeat itself going forward in the city of Cincinnati anyway, because of just the way things have shifted.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this is the first time that the city council members will be able to serve for 4 years.
Yes.
And that was pitched to voters, I think, that, you know, if we have more time, we'll be able to take on some of these complex issues. And, you know, chief among them, the pension
yes.
system needs some work.
Mm-hmm.
The city routinely has a structurally unbalanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
So our voters with this four-year term now, do you see that, the pension issue and the budget issues are finally going to get some permanent resolution?
I think it creates an opportunity. Howard's covered politics long enough to know that the cycle in Cincinnati is, with a two-year term, is you basically have 1 year where you can get something done, and maybe half of the next year before you're back into campaign mode. And it's very difficult to get anything done when city council folks are out trying to campaign for re-election. So now we do have at least a period of time where the opportunity exists for folks to take on difficult issues, knowing that they had a little time before they have to turn around and run for re-election. Whether that produces results, I guess, remains to be seen. I think there certainly are solutions to the pension issue that people recognize, and it's going to require some compromise, but I certainly would hope that we can tackle those tough issues and get something done.
Ashwin?
I hope so. I hope the longer terms does yield more of a positive change. I know that, you know, our party was against issue 4 in 2012. For one of the main reasons being that I just really feel like the best representatives are the ones who are most responsive and just most called upon by the people. But back to Caleb's point, I hope so. I hope it does.
I would say, in retrospect, I think some of the folks who supported the four-year terms, at least some of them anyway, now look back and think maybe we should have staggered it so that at least some part of council was up every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we'll see what happens.
Before we run completely out of time here, I think if I know my election calendar, 2014, there's just two countywide offices that would be up for election. One county commission seat,
right,
and the county auditor seat.
Yes.
There's also 13
yes.
judicial races.
Well, yeah.
And actually, we
right.
didn't mention the two, Sharon Kennedy and Judy French, at the statewide
right.
judicial level.
So we would assume that Republican incumbent Chris Monzel is going to seek re-election.
Yes, sir.
The Democrats trying to recruit somebody to run
against.
We
certainly are. I'm not
Mr.
prepared.
Monzel.
Not prepared to make news here today, but we certainly are out talking to folks and hoping to recruit a strong candidate to run in that race.
And Ashwin, just real quick, what about the Republicans finding somebody to challenge Auditor Dusty Rhodes?
That's same is true as well. We'll find somebody. We don't have a name right now.
But you don't want to make any news.
That's right.
Okay. On it.
It's not going to be you, is it?
No. We've been reviewing the political headlines of 2013 and looking ahead to the contest later this year at the national, state, and local level. Our guest, Caleb Fox, the executive director of the Hamilton County Democratic Party, and Ashwin Korteil, the executive director of the Hamilton County Republican Party. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.